In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and I'm your host for another coolest conversations here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest today is well-known in power pop circles. It's Detroit area singer-songwriter Nick Pionti. He's had several albums featuring him backed by the Complicated Men, but his latest is titled Solo-ish and out on Gem Records. We'll hear a tad of its opening track, Big in Madrid, and then I'll be joined by Nick for your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock and Little Stephen's Underground Garage. With you in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, and for our coolest conversations today, I'm speaking with Detroit area singer-songwriter Nick Pionti. His latest album is Solo-ish and is out on Gem Records. Nick, how are you doing?
Great, Manfred.
So you and your first band, let's think here for bands for a second, because you were like in sixth grade. That's a great story. The group was Dwarf, and even though you formed like in sixth grade, you were together for quite a number of years, like 14, 15 years, and you kind of go on the West Coast, and that kind of Dwarf morphs into the Take, I think. Is that right? You had the Take for a while out there. So after that, was it the next band was the Respectables?
Yeah, I took quite a hiatus, and then I had a band called the Respectables. We did a couple records and an EP, and then that ran its course. And
Well, what I'm going to add is the solo thing. Did that really start you thinking of yourself as a solo artist like in 2013? Is that one of the first?
Yeah, I did an album in 2002, but that was just me kind of getting my feet wet back again. I got to take that down from streaming one day because it's not my best. But 2013, it was 13 in my head. And that was kind of me, okay, I still got something left in the tank. And that kind of really started me in back end. It kind of caught me by surprise how the attention it got, and that kept me going, and did a couple albums, and then started recording with Gem, and I kind of lost count if this is a fourth or fifth record with Gem.
And now some of these records with Gem, though, you formed this another band, the Complicated Men, and so you were doing solo stuff Why did you put the band around behind you?
I put the band together mainly because I wanted to do some live shows. When I did 13 in My Head, Beyond the Static, I guess the four albums I did with Donnie Brown playing drums, who was in the band The Verve Pipe, you know, Michigan band ahead. It was a huge hit back in the 90s, The Freshman. But Donnie was a great songwriter in his own right. They did an album where Adam Schlesinger produced it. And I liked Donnie's pop sensibilities. And I started working with him. And then after the next album, Andy Reid, who also played in a later version of The Verve Pipe. Andy has a studio in his home in Bay City. And Andy would like cut his bass tracks there. And it just, him and Donnie are like, you know, they're like, you know, brothers from a different mother, and they do a lot of recording together, work together. So it was very easy to work with Donnie and Andy. But, you know, I wanted to play some shows locally, and they both live a couple hours away from me. So I started The Complicated Men, and we recorded, I guess three albums together. It's just kind of time flies.
Yeah. Well, I note that on the new record, on Soloish, you've got Joe, right? What's his last name? How do you say his last name?
Yeah, well, he says it's Doc Savage, but, you know, I saw Doc Sawitz till about 2 years. He goes, you know, it's Doc Savage. I said, I don't believe you, but okay, I'm going to call you Doc Savage. I mean, it's what a cool name.
So he does play on there, but you weren't, for the solo issue, you're back, you're working with Donnie and Andy, but you didn't put the band, so Complicated Men aren't really supporting you on that. And why is that?
Well, when I was, we were recording Up and Out of It, and I had some more songs that I needed for that album. So I started doing a couple things with Andy. I went up there one day and we did a ballad. And then I said, you know, I kind of want to do something a little bit different. And it wasn't, you know, I wasn't going to do two Complicated Men albums in the same year. So I started actually just sending him some rough songs recorded on my iPhone, just you know, to a click track so he could add some things to it. And then he would come back with some great, you know, rhythm tracks. And then I would drive up to Bay City, which is a bit of a drive from where I live. And then I would lay down the guitars and my vocals, and then we'd kind of make a record from there. So I could do a lot of the homework done. It was much less time consuming than, you know, working with a band out and driving to rehearsal and back and just hashing all the songs, which is great, but it took a lot of time. And I've been writing so long, and I know that Donnie and Andy know exactly where I'm coming from. And I also wanted to kind of give it a different sound and just a different vibe than The Complicated Men, and really happy with how the album turned out. I think sonically it sounds great.
Oh, I agree. So these demos that you were doing on your phone initially, you were sending those to Andy. I was wondering how many were there? Because there's like 11 tracks on the album.
Yeah, I would just do a simple GarageBand demo and send it to him. And then a couple of the songs, I think Big in Madrid and Break Even, I think we cut them, actually the whole songs right there. That was like the last two songs we did for the record. So that was kind of more of like a live in the studio thing. But I think it'd be hard to tell which songs were recorded that way and which weren't, you know.
Well, when you were sending these demos first off to Andy, and you mentioned him like sending back with rhythm and guitar parts, is that what you said?
Yeah, I would just, you know, go on GarageBand and
my question about it really is that he's sending you back some parts, but is there any, was he offering you any arrangement ideas or feedback, any tough love that he was given on these songs?
The biggest difference was the song Poison, because I wrote it and it kind of goes to A to E minor, but he did A to E, like a 1 and 5. It was, you know, more ambiguous and totally turned the song into something more like The Grays. In fact, they probably aped the Grays. I don't know if you're familiar with that band, but so that was a big change. And then I subsequently re-recorded that song. It's called Your Poison instead of just Poison, and it's back to the original intention. But, you know, I kind of love both versions.
So what is the time length here that between him sending off sending these original demos out, and then you find it, you actually, because it seems like you were pretty much from the get-go, he was sending your stuff back, and that's kind of the album was already kind of growing at that moment.
It was really fast. I mean, I think we really got into it in early 25, and the album was mastered and done by June. So, I just took a few visits, maybe 4 or 5 times. I drove up there to do my parts, and then Andy would add some guitars also and some Mellotron, and it was great. I kind of gave him just free rein. Because I know his taste, he knows my music, and we go way back, and it was like just kind of I knew if I wanted something different, I'd have to let Andy do his thing. So, if anyone is working as a solo artist, especially, and he's a great guy to work with if you can't get there. He can pretty much play anything, and it was great.
I was wondering, or you can remind me, it seems like you have at least 2, maybe 3 daughters. How many daughters do you have?
Yeah, I have 3 daughters.
3 daughters.
Yeah, they're now, my oldest daughter gave us a granddaughter, so the girls continue.
Well, congratulations, and, granddad.
Yeah, I was going to go by like granddad or grandpa, like grandpa boy, Paul Westerberg, but my daughter wants papa, so when she can figure that out, whatever Tatum is, that's our granddaughter, wants to call me, that's fine with me. It is kind of neat. She's really mesmerized by the guitar. She comes over and she comes in our room. She looks up at the wall and she points at the guitar. She wants them down on the floor so she can play with them. And it's pretty neat.
That is very cool. Well, thinking about your ladies, seems like in the past they've served to create some song inspirations, things going on in their lives. These tunes on Solo-ish, are they mainly influenced by your own experiences or others?
Yeah, I mean, I've got, the Big in Madrid thing was kind of more of a joke, I would say, like people around here. It's like, hey, your band. I said, well, we're Big in Madrid. I mean, back in the day, you could, Madrid would buy a lot of my, CDs and vinyl before postage got crazy. It's just ridiculous. There is one shop in Madrid called Rock and Roll Circus that buys, several of my records. I ship them to him and he sells them. I just get them to him, really for my cost, just so he can get them to a few fans out there. But Big in Madrid kind of came from that. But yeah, there's other songs. There's a song called that's about kind of growing up with my stepdad, who was not a lot of fun. That's called Dark in My Days. And
I was going to ask you about that. In fact,
he wasn't.
Let's talk about that one for a second. It's got this great imagery in that, especially the line about riding the back seat with secondhand smoke. I just, for a certain era for people growing up, that's just, oh man, that was the worst.
I know. You just
and cracking,
in there.
And cracking the window just a little bit in the front and then pretending to exhale. They would exhale out the window. But of course, because the windows open, the smoke would just blow straight back into the back seat. It was just horrible.
Yeah. Both my mom and my stepdad smoked. And he was, it was kind of guy. He just didn't say much around him. He was, I don't know.
But in the song, you write about that you forgive him, right?
Well, kind of. It's like, I forgive you when I forget you. So, I will give a shit. I mean, he, in late his last few years of life, he did, he got much nicer, but it was tough growing up as a teenager and, in that situation. My mom, I know if she probably would have done it over again, she would have maybe done it different, but, she was, 4 kids and divorced. And back when really nobody was divorced in the 60s, I was in my school, elementary school, there were no divorces, it was, so it was quite a thing when we moved in a new neighborhood. My mom was a divorcee wearing mini skirts and smoking a cigarette and looked good. I think some of the other housewives were got a little nervous when she moved in, but, but it was fine.
And so when you began your, we already mentioned Dwarf. I mean, you were like in 6th grade. Your mom was married to your stepfather then.
Yeah, soon after, yeah. And, he was pretty good for maybe a year or two. But, he drank quite a bit in the weekends, and he would get very sarcastic and just mean and just really unpleasant to be around, and we just tried to hide in our rooms, played records, and just kind of stayed out of his way. And it was like, it's funny, it was like our house, he came in and took over. It's like, you know, what happened to our house? And yeah, but we would see our dad on Sundays. I wasn't going to complain about him. It was just, I just didn't want to go there. Just we enjoyed that one time away from him, you know.
So what was he like in terms of your interest in music? Was this, did he try and stand in the way of any of those pursuits? Or was he supportive of those pursuits, or just sort of noncommittal?
No, he wasn't supportive. He just wasn't interested in really anything that we wanted to do. He liked to go shoot guns and drink beer. And, you know, we would shoot guns with them, you know, we'd bottles and cans. And that was fun, you know, doing a rifle. But when I finally got a pistol in my hand, I shot that. And I said, man, I really don't like the feeling of this. And so that was, I think, the last day I went shooting. I was maybe 13 or 14. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore.
How old are you now?
I am 65, which I tell you, that's an eye-opener.
Right. Well, so 65, and you wrote Dark in My Days when?
About a year and a half ago. And, you know, my mom's gone. I probably, it's easy to write that song after my mom was gone. She died a few years ago. I didn't want to bring that up. We both knew it. It didn't need to be talked about. But, yeah, you know. But that's just one song. Yeah.
Well, it's a great song, too.
I feel like as a songwriter, you know, probably, you know, there's probably different people that maybe could, you know, interpret the song a different way. And obviously a younger artist could probably have more success with some of my stuff because I write kind of classic pop rock. When anything that's on the radio pretty much that. It's just production values that might be different. I mean, the new Olivia Rodrigo song, it's three chords. It's G, C, and D. I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of rock and roll, and it's packaged different. But so thinking of that, I started working with a young singer that I've known her family through the restaurant. I knew her when she was a little girl, and now she's 19, and knew that she was a really good singer, but never saw her. But last November, we did a guitarist and I, Joe, we did a show at my restaurant, Sibley Gardens. It's an Italian steakhouse. We don't do entertainment very often, but she came up and sang a couple songs and really kind of blew me away. So then we had a discussion. I said, so have you ever been to a recording studio? And she's like, no. I said, well, I'm recording some things. You want to come and sing on them? She's like, yeah, sure. So she came out there, you know, by herself. And just was amazing. Her name's Ayla Ottenbright. And we started, so I've got some songs that I haven't released yet that I've made with her that are a little bit more kind of acoustic based. That'll be like for a different project.
Well, that sounds interesting. I think maybe I saw her listed on your Facebook page because I was, you know, on your social media.
She's super talented. She has an old soul. She's 19, but, you know, grew up listening to her parents and grandparents' music because her wealth of knowledge of music's pretty amazing. And so we're working on actually her first single's coming out next week, and it's a ballad that I wrote, but she started singing on it. First she sang backup, then she sang the second verse. I said, you know what, why don't you sing the whole thing? And so by Jeff Michael, who's producing it, who's produced all my records, he said, Nick, what are you going to give all your songs away? And I said, yeah, one by one, she's going to sing the whole Nick Punti catalog. And Jeff replied, poor girl, obviously.
So she's doing, you're supplying this material, but you're not producing, though. You've got this other gentleman in there.
Yeah, I got Jeff. Well, we're all kind of, Joe, Doc Savage, myself, and Ayla, we're all kind of doing it together. But I put the title to Jeff because, you know, he's there. But it's a group effort for sure, an arrangement and everything. And Ayla started writing with us as well. And she's got some great lyrical ideas and her melodies. You know, Joe will have like an instrumental he wrote, and then Ayla and I will start writing some lyrics, and then she'll, choose her own melody, and it's just great. It's really fun. it's nice to be a mentor and not just thinking about, you know, my own music for a change. But thinking of my own music, I have another friend that comes to the restaurant. His name's Jim Diamond. I'm sure you probably heard of Jim.
I've heard of Jim. Yeah,
he's the Detroit.
I've worked with Jim before.
Yeah, haven't you?
He produced an album, the Walgus album, and he's also mastered things subsequently. But
yeah, well, he's a customer of the restaurant, and we've been talking for the last couple of years about recording something. So we're going to go record a couple songs.
That's very exciting. I love to hear that.
I think that'll be really kind of up the underground garage's alley. So,
he loves putting tambourines on things, and rightly so.
Oh, you gotta have tambourines, you know.
He's a big tambourine man. I'll digress here to say that in the studio, you know, he prides himself, you know, on his guitar sort of textures, and he's got this array of fuzz pedals that he had set up, and then he did some processing with these sounds, and our guitarist, Jeff Walls was around then, and he was like, "Oh, where these guitar tones are really, really great, Jim. Exactly, what are you doing there?" And he could mind if I take a picture of this? And Jim sort of looked at him like, "Dude, this is, you know, this is my thing. You know, this is why I'm hired. No, you can't take pictures of it."
That sounds like Jim.
You know, it was very funny. Well, I want to direct us back here to. Let's talk some more specifically about Big in Madrid. So we heard that just before we started chatting, and I wanted to confirm here. So that is kind of a reference to you having success overseas, right? Oh, so is that, as you were explaining, it's Big in Madrid. It's almost kind of like it's a cautionary tale, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're growing up, you know, you say you want to be, you know, rock star or whatever. This is back in the early 70s when I started in the whole thing. Well, you know, you never have a backup plan. And like, I remember little Steven said, you know, backup plan is great if you don't want to make it. I don't know if he really said that, but it was like, for him, there was no backup plan. It was, this is all I can do. And it's all I want to do. And if you have a backup plan, you probably will fall back to it. But in my case, the restaurant business, my family that, you know, I run and own now with my dad, and it's a great backup plan. I love it, and I can still do my music. The Big in Madrid was not that really big in Madrid, but we've got a, you know, strong, probably small fan base there, like most of the power pop people. But they're so supportive, and I know Kurt Baker lived in Spain for years, and he had to. You know, he had to love it because I know they loved him over there. And I couldn't make a move like that, like he did when he was younger and not with a family and stuff. But
So let's drill down on this a minute, because so you'd work, and you mentioned the family restaurant, the Sibley Gardens, but you left, you know, you went out and you did ultimately come back. I was just wondering, when you were first, Dwarf is going on, and then you let you guys move to the West Coast. I mean, you were intent on whatever make it is you were shooting for that. And was there, in your teenage mind, did you ever think that you could actually one day be doing music and like running the restaurant?
Well,
that seem like no way am I going to be doing that. I'm making music. That restaurant thing is not for me.
I mean, yeah, kind of. It was like the restaurant business was there. And I thought if the music didn't work out, it would be there. But when you're in your early 20s, I mean, that tunnel vision, it's like, yeah, we were going to make it. I mean, we moved to L.A. We had no really reason to move to L.A., no connections, no anything. But when we did get out there, we were getting some label interest. But, you know, as we talked before, just was probably the wrong time for the wrong kind of music. We were... pretty much what I'm doing now is what we were doing then. I just feel like I've gotten better at it. You know, if I was writing 13 in my head back in 1986, I think, yeah, things could have been different. But, you know, I'm a slow learner. And that's actually one of the songs that I gave to Ayla to record. It's called Slow Learning, but not really about me.
Another great tune on Solo-ish is this Handshake Deal. And in that song, there's a line about taking a leap of faith. And it just seems like that notion, that leap of faith, is a recurring theme in your songs, you know, extending yourself, being extra vulnerable in your pursuit of love or art. I mean, I cannot think of the specific other songs, but it seems like you even have lyrics talking about taking leaps of faith and other songs. Is that fair? Is that
I try not to repeat myself, but definitely the feeling of that. And I remember when I did Handshake Deal, I sent the demo to Marty. He said, "Is that about me?" I go, "Yeah, kind of. I think the first line, it was a handshake deal." And I say, "How's it going? It was a handshake deal, and now you're something at the wheel." But and it was kind of like, hey, we had an agreement, you know, Marty and I, we've got along and this and that. And
we're talking about Marty here. You're referencing Marty.
Marty Scott, kind of, yeah.
Gem Records, your label.
Yeah, he gives me $5 every time I mention his name. So,
you can retire on that, can't you?
But you think so? That damn Marty, that son of a, no. but so I said, yeah, I don't know how many records I'm going to do, but we'll do this one, we'll do this one, this one. And I'll say, okay, one more. And he'll say, well, we got a cooler song. We got to do one more. Okay, one more. So, and then I actually, when I was going to do Soloish, I said, Marty, I don't know if you want to put this record out. It's a little bit different. But then near the end of it, I wrote Big in Madrid, and it was like, okay, yeah, I could. This is definitely still me. It still rocks. But the idea when I first made the album solo, it was trying to, you know, not be softer. I'm not going to make a yacht rock record. But, you know, it was just probably maybe a little bit more personal in some of the lyrics and things like that. If I don't make a shout out to my wife, Kelly, who allows this, you know, music to continue. And she knows I get very obsessed with things. And the guitars, and, you know, going to guitar stores. Don't you already have that guitar? Yeah, but this one's got throwback pickups instead of Lahler. Really, it's different. Can you hear it? She's like, okay, whatever.
So, Nick, how many guitars do you have in your house?
I don't have that many. I mean, I've got friends.
Is the number that is not many?
Less than 10.
Does that mean 24?
No, less than 10 is not many, and I... Well, if you count my acoustics, I'm looking at 1, 2, 4, 5, 6. So it's maybe 11. Okay, so
11 electric guitars. Did you include acoustics or not?
Yeah, I actually got into acoustics. I used to have one acoustic, and I figured there was no ever need to have another acoustic. But now I can tell acoustics like I can tell different pastas. You know, it's like so. I've got a taste for acoustic guitars now, so I got Collings, I got a Martin, and I got a Gibson, and they're all great, and they're all different, and they all kind of have a different need.
Well, you mentioned pastas, and we've already referenced the family business, the Sibley Gardens, and you mentioned running it with your dad. I mean, your father's quite, he's up there, isn't he? How old is your dad?
He's 93. His name's Sam, and I go by Son of Sam. Oh, people old enough to laugh at that. I shouldn't make a joke about that.
Best to your father there. I'm glad to hear that he's doing well.
Yeah, he's doing great. Comes into work 3 days a week where he'll do everything. He'll do the opening duties. He'll do the QuickBooks. He balances checkbooks, runs to the banks, running errands, puts liquor away. And my joke is now he comes in 3 days a week. But when he wants to tell me what I'm doing wrong, he'll come in 4 days a week. He'll live extra day just for that. So, but we're best of friends. He was the best man in my wedding, and so it's a pretty great relationship still. And he just amazes me. You know, there's no quit in him. He just, you know, persistence, and he just keeps doing it, and he keeps him active and healthy.
So you got some of those genes in you, you figure? You're going to keep making music, right?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, his aunt lived to 101, and you know, I had another discussion with a friend of mine, Chris Richards. I was in his band years ago, Chris Richards and the Subtractions, and he's in the band The Legal Matters, which Andy Reid's part of. And his wife is encouraging him to keep doing music. It's like, Chrissy, it's something you do. You don't retire from it. You keep doing it. So it's really refreshing hearing my friend's wife telling him to, you know, you got to keep doing it. You're happiest when you're making music. And Kelly, my wife, she understands that too. And so, yeah, I think as long as the songs keep coming, and they really do, especially lately, lyrically, all these lyrics are popping out, and I'm really happy to be able to still create something that enough people like, you know, that can still justify doing it.
Right. And so with that in mind, when is the next gig? Do you have anything coming up?
Well, yeah, we don't have a band tuned up right now. We did an acoustic thing, but we did a lot of the songs on solo-ish. I just picked up the vinyl for the album. I had it pressed at Third Man Records in Detroit. And that was pretty cool because I've always kind of wanted to press something there. Usually go overseas, but Jem put out the album digitally and CD. I said, you know, I kind of missed out not having the vinyl. I said, Marty, do you mind if I just press the vinyl myself and I'll sell them on my Bandcamp? So they're available on Bandcamp if you want to pick up vinyl. It's on 180 gram clear red vinyl, and they sound fantastic. They did such a good job there. I mean, Jack White's not going to do anything halfway, you know.
That's right. I was going to say, I went to Third Man, I guess it was in Detroit. I was there, and you know, you can look into the shop floor where they're pressing stuff, and everybody's got the same sort of outfits on, and it looked, you know, and I was standing there looking at that, and some guy came up who worked there. It was like, do you have any questions? And I said, you know, I just can't. Where did you get the Oompa Loompas from? You know.
That's what I was thinking of when you said that. With the if they're a little shorter, if they would hire me to work there, I'd be confused as one probably.
All right, we're going to hear another song, and I want to set it up. I want to talk about One Dimensional. So, when your kids were growing up, did you ever have to deal with Flat Stanley as a school project?
You know, I didn't.
So the idea is, it's this. I'm bringing up Flat Stanley because he was one dimensional, right? He's just a piece of paper, and the
idea, right.
It's
right,
a story
okay.
where he's supposed to be some kid, and a billboard falls on him, and he gets squished flat, and so his parents like roll him up and mail him off to somebody, and that's how he kind of travels around the world, and then kids are given, you know, a picture of Flat Stanley, and they're supposed to color him in, like a, you know, like a kindergarten thing, first grade sort of thing. But what sparked you to write One Dimensional?
That's fun. I should use a Flat Stanley for a video for that song.
There you go. There you go. Perfect.
Well, I think that was like when I was starting to do songs for solo-ish. And the first line is like, I want to be a folk singer. Kind of like I'm going
to. Oh, yeah. You have a line in there about changing your name to Zimmerman, your last name to Zimmerman, or changing Zimmerman.
Obviously.
Makes me think of the Bob Dylan. Yeah,
exactly. That's what it was about. It's like, because he changed his name to Dylan, I'm going to change my name to Zimmerman. Kind of a little, kind of a funny thing, but I hope Bob doesn't mind when he listens. Like, but yeah, so that's what it's about. It's just kind of maybe kind of reinvent myself slightly. I mean, you know, at 65, I'm not trying to reinvent my wheels, but that's what that song is about. And then One Dimensional, it's like I get when I get so focused on something, and then I said, I'm too confessional because I talk too much. I'll say everything that's on my mind. And I know my wife sometimes, she's like, okay, you know, I'm just trying to watch my show on TV here. Especially if I come home from night work and, you know, I'm hyped up working, and her day's about done because our daughter gets up for work at, you know, 6 a.m. and she still lives with us, our youngest. And so that's what that song's kind of about, the kind of two sides of me doing this. But then, so yeah, a lot of relationships, a lot of little details about us in the songs. But
well, you have a very interesting life, you know, and then the art of that is taking that interest in putting out there and have it be relatable to people, you know, so they identify with those aspects.
Yeah, that's what I try to do. I mean, I've got like favorite artists. Mike Viola is one of my favorite artists, but his songs are so personal. Only he could write those songs. I love them, but they're not like universal subjects really. But he's an amazing writer, and he, if you don't know Mike Viola, he's the one that sang That Thing You Do. He's buddies with Adam Schlesinger and Fountains of Wayne guys. But he did his own thing. He's really true to his own path. He's done a lot of movie soundtracks, things. He's done a lot of production work, but just amazing writer. But I would never try to do exactly what he does because it's so just him, you know?
Well, that brings up an interesting thing. I mean, you obviously have the family business there, but had you ever considered that type of career, trying to like write for TV or films?
Yeah, I think as with anything in the music business, you know, the connections are so important. I mean, there's so much talent, and it's like, why is something bigger than the other? Well, you know, they either had the money behind it, the connections, or whatever. I think the old days where a DJ could play a band's demo and they get signed from it, like, you know, what happened with the Cars, that just doesn't really happen anymore. And I had one guy said, boy, years ago, I wrote a song, goes, boy, that could be a hit single. Probably I could get it done. Do you have $100,000? I'm like, okay, no, I don't. And if that's what it takes, nah, I'm not interested.
Man, Nick, I got to wrap it up. I'm going to have to say thanks so much for speaking with me again on our Coolest Conversations.
And thanks so much for having me once again, man, Fred. And I appreciate the support. And hopefully we'll talk again soon.
We will talk again soon for certain. And then we're going to give a spin now to One Dimensional. It's from Nick Puente's new album, Solo-ish, out on Gem Records here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. His one-dimensional side, singer-songwriter Nick Puente here in Little Steven's Underground Garage with some of the track from his latest album, Solo-ish, which is out on Gem Records. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Nick for speaking with me on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza and Kurt Baker for producing our podcast. Next time around, we'll check in with Fleshtones lead guitarist Keith Strang. The group is celebrating their 50-year anniversary with special shows this year. Keith has also released a debut solo album called The King of Queens. He plays on the new upcoming Stupidity album from the Swedish band that's due out in June. And he plays guitar on Stop and Take a Minute, Please, a new song from my band The Woggles and included on our Rarities album, Stop and Take a Minute. So we've got a lot of ground to cover with Keith on your next Coolest Conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.